We specialise in talking to first home buyers and helping them into their first house.
Yeah.
I looked at the stats that we've done thus far this year, and me alone, I've settled $30 million worth of lending this year.
Wow.
And about 80% of that will be to people buying their first house. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, look, it's hard. It is hard. There's no question about that, but that doesn't make it impossible.
No.
So, I think all the doom and gloom that you see in the newspaper and reading that on TV, there's definitely an element of truth to that. But, you know, if you get some advice, you talk to the right people, it's totally doable.
It's Time to Identify, a podcast from Rachel Klaver from rachelklaver.com.
It seems like everyone's saying that no one can afford to buy a house these days. But if you talk to Campbell Hasty from GoTo Guys, you'll find that there are many people who are still able to get that golden rainbow of a mortgage to help them find and buy their own house. I'm really looking forward to talking to Campbell about his own business journey in terms of running GoTo Guys and his approach in helping people get onto the market and into the market with their first homes. Plus, hopefully, he's going to tell us one of his favourite stories about the house he started with, because it was a bit of a reality check for those of us who want to live in mansions. I'm really looking forward to you finding out a bit more about moving into the property ladder and how mortgages and that sort of style of businesses work with Campbell Hasty today. Campbell, it's really exciting to have you here, because also you're in studio, which makes things so much more fun than talking on a phone. Do you want to tell everyone what you do for a job?
I'm a mortgage broker. Our specialty is helping first home buyers into Auckland property. Really, that's what we do.
And what I find amazing about that is there are people still able to buy houses.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a homeowner, but obviously all we see a lot of the time is people saying it's too hard to get into the market, it's too hard, but you actually do have people, just to, we'll just counter that.
Totally.
There are actual people that actually buy houses.
Yeah, so as I say, we specialise in talking to first home buyers and helping them into their first house.
Yeah.
I looked at the stats that we've done thus far this year, and me alone, I've settled $30 million worth of lending this year.
Wow.
And about 80% of that will be to people buying their first house. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, look, it's hard. It is hard. There's no question about that, but that doesn't make it impossible.
No.
So, I think all the doom and gloom that you see in the newspaper and reading that on TV, there's definitely an element of truth to that. But, you know, if you get some advice, you talk to the right people, it's totally doable.
And why would it be a good idea for people to go to a independent mortgage broker than to go straight to a bank, for example?
Yeah, well, it's the advice.
Yeah.
It is the advice part of it. People often think that all a mortgage broker does is get best rate, best deal. We do that.
Yeah.
But look, if the money was free, it wouldn't matter if you couldn't get your hands on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? They're looking like it's about to be free, right?
Yeah,
the OCR dropping and things.
Although I think I saw a post on your Facebook that said, the OCR's dropped, why hasn't my mortgage rate?
Yeah, that's right. Well, that hasn't sort of translated. Well, see, exactly right. That's my point right there. But yeah, as I say, you've got to be able to get your hands on the money. You've got to be able to get through the lending criteria, convince the bank that you're a good bet. And then we'll talk about the price.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so just to build that out a little bit further, so we get you the approval, that's actually not enough. You've got to use it.
Yeah,
you've got to
find
the
something
house
that you can get for that.
You've got that scary moment when you're walking into an open home for the first time, and the guy standing in the suit with the Harcourt's label on his lapel, or the Ray White guy. You know, oh my God, I have to talk to this real estate agent. You have to go through that many, many times. You have to sit down and with a piece of paper and put
do
a price on
minuses.
It, and all the negotiation. And are you doing the right thing? Is this the right thing we should be doing? Oh God, it's a whole lot of money.
And it's also expectations, isn't it? Because for us, we've got a house, and when we look at a new house, even with us, quite often we'll go, oh man, this house is amazing. If you're looking at a new house, and then you're like, okay, so I thought it would be worth this amount of money. It's actually worth this amount of money, and you have to adjust your expectations, don't you? Often, especially with the first home buying, do you find that people coming into the marketplace have got realistic expectations of what they can get for their money, or are you having to help them with that level of expectation?
It's actually a bit of both. So I definitely give them a reality check when they come and see me, because, like you said, they have an idea in their mind as to what they might like to buy. But when they come to me, I tell them what their limit actually is. And you cannot go above 850 or whatever it might be, that's just where your borrowing capacity tops out, right? So there's that. It puts that boundary in their minds. So when they're looking on Trade Me, they can kind of set it.
Yes, right? Which makes it easier.
Yeah, stop looking at the $1.5 million houses. You know, just dial it back a bit from there.
So unfortunately, not a go.
Yeah, so there's that reality check. But because we see property every day, we can give people a pretty good steer on that. We can pull out some stats and say, well, look, you know, if you went to an open home and said, look, I'm really interested in this one, it's going for auction, I don't know what it's likely to go for. Well, we can dig out some data on that particular property and give it to you.
So you've got a really good idea, so you know if you're going into auction that you're not going to overstep and go over the value. And so I do know, you know, spoiler alert, I've heard the story before, but I really like the story you've told me about your first home and going and getting your first home. Was your first home a palatial, amazing house?
No, it wasn't.
How would you describe your house, Campbell?
Ooh. Can I say it out loud?
You can say the yes word.
Yeah, so it was a shithole.
Yeah.
It was modest.
Yeah.
That's probably a really accurate term for it. It was modest. We did do it up, 2 years after we'd owned it. And, you know, when we walked in there, it actually needed to be tidied up.
Yes.
The previous owners had left a whole lot of stuff behind. The garden was a mess, so we tidied that up. It was, you know, it was a very modest house. And I can tell you the price of it in 2003 was $254,000. That's what it was.
That's a good price.
So I believe right now it would be worth something like $750,000. You know, and that tells you about what's happened with Auckland property prices.
Yes, definitely.
It was just Bryan Crescent, Stanmore Bay, far from
absolutely,
here, right?
Absolutely,
But, you know, $254,000 right then was a modest house. Mm. It really was. And just as $700,000 now is actually a modest house on
now.
The Hibiscus Coast.
It really
coast,
is,
you know,
yeah. And
that.
They do, it is, you know, like I look at that and go, a modest house here for $700 might be $1 million, say, in the Bays or North Shore, and that might be $600 in another suburb. So it is very much where you are as much as what the house is like, isn't
totally,
it?
Totally, totally. Yeah. So, and there are price points that work really, really well for first home buyers. A friend of mine said he went up and had a look at a property again in Stanmore Bay. It was marketed with a price on it of, I think, $780,000. He walked into the open home and it was just full of couples. Some of them were dragging kids along.
That's the mark for that
group of people these days.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, so you've sent... We were just talking before about how there's a bit of a conversation going on in the media at the moment about, oh, you know, with interest rates and things like that and things happening overseas, that there might be a recession affecting, and people are saying there isn't. And to be honest, I don't stress about it. I just think we just go and do our thing and just keep moving forward. But you've seen some ups and downs, haven't you, through the years in terms of lending and things. Have you learnt some lessons from that yourself?
Yeah, totally. So I've been around long enough that I've seen now two booms, two property market booms now. So I started mortgage broking in 2005. I purchased my first house in 2003.
Yes.
I was just about to get that confused with getting married, which was 2004.
Always got to be careful about the dates.
So we saw the market come up from the mid-2000s. The global financial crisis came along and everything popped around about 2008, 2009, and like really popped. And it has come back since about 2009, 2010 to where we are now 10 years later, and it's hit another flat spot.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's a really accurate description of where we're at right now.
It
is a flat spot.
It hasn't dipped.
No.
It's just flat. Like I look at the value of our house, we bought it 2 years ago. It is valued at the same amount that we bought it 2 years ago. The previous house we had for a year, and it went up like $350,000 in value in a year and a half or something, you know, completely different, you know, similar value houses. So I do agree with you that it's flat, it's not dipped.
Well, when you put it, let me put it to you in these terms. So when you're driving down the motorway, your foot is on the accelerator. You go to pass someone, it goes, you know, you push a little harder on the accelerator, right? Then you move back into the left lane, and what happens to your foot? It comes off the gas, and you feel like you're going a hell of a lot slower. You're still cruising, but you are going slower, but that's not a recession. You're still, you know,
it's
you're still going
moving.
Down the motorway.
It's still moving.
Yeah, yeah.
And did the global financial crisis affect you as a business owner?
Yes, it did.
So what impact did it have for you?
It was significant, actually. So at that point, so 2008, I had been in business for approximately 3 years, and we had ridden the coattails of, you know, that boom that I was just talking about, and we were doing pretty
it
well.
It feels easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it felt really easy. But GFC basically came along, and there was no one who wanted, all of a sudden, no one wanting to borrow money. And that's, you know, we earn commission off the basis of lending people money.
Because that's one thing that most people don't understand, do they? You don't charge the people that you work with, do you?
That's right.
You just get a commission if they get their finance through your help.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right. That's right. That's right. So they purchase
the
house. Yeah, I'm free. Yeah, they purchase the house. The loan is advanced, and at that point, I get paid.
And to clarify, the loan's not more expensive because you're doing that for them. It's
that's
the same price regardless. It's just a commission. Yeah.
It's often cheaper, actually.
It's often cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
negotiate.
A beneficial thing. Just clarifying that, because lots of people don't understand that it is actually a free service. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Correct.
So, okay, so back to the.
Yeah.
I just want to, you know.
Yeah. So no. 2009 or 2008, actually, I could see that the number of mortgages we were writing, the number of people we were assisting was falling. And, you know, our income was going the same way. And it had been, I think it must have been something like 4 or 5 months, and I hadn't earned a cent.
That's
right?
Scary. Are you the main income earner? Or have you got like both?
No,
earning,
no. Kirsty, my wife at the time, was still my wife at the time. She's still my wife now.
Some people refer them to them as their first wife, and I'm like, what? Like, you're still married to them, right?
Yeah. So no, she's gainfully employed, and she always has been. So,
but it's still scary losing a significant part of the income, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we got to a point where we thought, geez, if this doesn't change, then we're probably going to lose the house, and
that's
we're going to be
huge.
Forced to sell it. So you know what we did? We sold it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Before you preempted it.
Yeah, that's right. We front-footed that, and it turned out to be one of the best decisions I think we've ever made. I'm quite proud of the fact that we made that decision, because it's a bloody hard one to make. But if you look at the stats in terms of property prices, you can see in 2008, property prices peaked. And that is, they peaked in August of 2008, and that is the month we sold.
Thank goodness
that was
for
good,
that.
That was good luck.
Good timing for
not
you.
Not good management. It was good luck. But it was good management in the sense that we decided to do it, and we were.
And you were proactive as opposed to reactive. Because I do, like, I've got a couple of people that I'm working with whose businesses are in quite a lot of distress, and they're actually teetering on that thing of, do we need to sell the house to free up funds? And it's a very scary thing to lose that thing that you've put as a security
this
blanket
was our
in
first
your
house.
Yes.
Right? That house was purchased on the 31st of May 2003. That was Kirsty's birthday.
Oh, so it was significant.
It was, she walked in the house that day with two new kittens, right?
Yeah.
Right? It was a big deal to sell it. But we did it because it was the right thing to do. And I'm really pleased that we did, because we banked basically a couple of $100,000. And that kept us going for a while. And it's provided the equity for us to be where we are now in terms of, you know, property and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
It's given us that security going forward. And then, you know, that wasn't actually the end of it, actually, because we needed to make some decisions around the business. Do we shut it?
Yeah.
Or do we do something to make it better and, you know, leaner and meaner or whatever it was? And that was obviously the decision we did make, which was
so
to
you
go
did
leaner
make
and
it you made it leaner and meaner to make it easier to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just let me flesh that out a little bit. So we started out, our name at the time was Financial Consult Group, right?
Sounds quite serious.
Well, it was, I suppose.
A little bit different to go-to guys.
Yeah, we wanted to be serious financial advisors. So we called ourselves that, and we would do mortgages for people. Mm. We would do mortgages for people who wanted to buy their first house, second house, third house, investment property, commercial property, subdivision,
so just
any old thing.
Yeah.
We did life insurance of all shapes and descriptions. We talked to people about investment property. We talked to people about, you know, all sorts of KiwiSaver. Well, it wasn't KiwiSaver at that time, but, you know, managed funds and investing. We did a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So part of becoming leaner and meaner meant we had to strip all that away and just do one thing, one thing. And the thing we chose is the thing we do now, which is helping first-time buyers in the Auckland
market.
Which
in some ways is amazingly risky, because you changed it in a time where people weren't buying homes.
The size of the percentage of first home buyers back then in terms of the overall property market was about 7%.
So hardly anything.
It was strange, though.
Yeah.
It was really strange because as soon as we said, this is who we are, this is what we do, and this is, we claimed that ground and dropped a flag into it, you know what happened?
Business started growing.
Well, it did. Bugger me, it did. So before we said, we do everything for everyone, right? That's what we said we did, and no one came. But then we said, we only do this. And people came from everywhere because they thought, geez, these guys know what they're on about. I wonder if they can help me.
I think it is a secret to so many businesses. I know for us at Identify, we went through exactly the same thing where we were everything to everyone. And we had customers and we were growing, but I felt so stressed out all the time. And when I say we were growing, me and Rod weren't making any money. The business was growing, but all the money was going to paying people to do all the different things. And it was very stressful. And when we simplified and really narrowed our offering, that's when the business started to turn and change, make money, but also deliver a better service. And I got my enjoyment back, I think, too.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing, too. We really did. I certainly got the enjoyment factor back because I remember what it was like to buy my first house. You know, and I mentioned before, Kirsty walking in with the kittens on her, you know, I won't say what age she was, but her birthday.
Yeah, her young birthday.
Yeah, young birthday. That didn't start with a three. And it was special. I remember standing on the back deck, looking out across this sort of unruly garden, coffee in hand. It was like it must have been like a Sunday, the following weekend after we'd moved in. The sun was shining and I just looked around and went, wow, this is all mine. You know, it's a really good feeling.
It's the most amazing feeling.
Yeah, yeah, I still remember it now. It's fantastic. And so I figured it would be great to be able to help other people have that same feeling. And so by picking that niche, we get to do that quite often.
And I think that's going back to when you find something that you've got a personal passion for. It doesn't have to be a consuming passion where you just feel passionate about so much that you just love this job so much, because I think business has got lots of ups and downs, and there's some days that we just don't want to be there but we have to. But I do think if you can find that real sense of a connection to what you're doing, it makes it much easier, doesn't it, to get through all those other bits and pieces.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. It definitely does, yeah.
And do you feel like, that story you talked about your own house, do you feel like that's that where you're talking to people when you're resetting their expectations, that helps them understand, hey, look, this is just your first house. You don't have to stay in it. Like I think about people who used to buy a house and stay in it for 30 years. That's not necessarily the thing. It's just getting on the property market, isn't it?
Yeah, I tell that story really often, a lot. And I also tell people that, this house is not the last house. It is the first house. But it's the first house in, you know, a great journey, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't end up with the $2 million house right from the start. Some do, actually, but most don't.
But the ones that do, probably it's not their ideal house. Potentially.
Oh, they're all a compromise at the end of the day. They are,
aren't they?
Yeah.
Because we were having this conversation last night with our daughters, actually, because we're just starting to do a few painting, a few walls and things, and we were talking about it, and they said, you know, this isn't a house that we feel is our forever home. And we said, we don't feel that way either. It's not a house that we feel attached to. We've had houses we felt very attached to. We don't feel attached to it. But we do know that we're thankful that we've got that house. And I do think feeling you've got to have we've had houses that we're completely in love with, but sometimes that's not necessarily the house you end up buying. You still, you know, the house it has to be functional and it has to work, but it doesn't have to be perfect for you to own it.
Not at all. As I say, they are all stepping stones. Well, generally speaking, they're all stepping stones onto something better. But I mean, do you need to have a house that's like the best?
No, you don't.
In the street,
I don't
and
think
makes
so.
your friends bloody envious and that sort. Like, you've got to just shake that off.
It's just going to be the first one robbed in the street.
Jeez, where do you live?
No. Oh, right.
I thought Stanmore Bay was a safe suburb.
No, we're pretty good. Have a couple of unruly teenagers in our street. That's about it. A couple of dogs. Oh, they're mine. I can't count those.
I often say to people, look, when you're walking into an open home, be prepared to walk away from it. Don't fall in love.
That's important.
It's sometimes really hard not to fall in love. And when you're dealing with a couple, one of them's more likely to fall in love with the property than the other. And it's not necessarily the lady either.
No.
You know?
No, I agree.
Not.
Yeah.
So try not to fall in love with the damn thing. Pretend that you're not going to get it.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
And then feel grateful when you do.
Rod will probably kill me for this. That was my husband. But we fell in love with a house about 3 or 4 years ago, and we were at the auction and we had a limit of how much we were going to spend. We knew we could go more, but we had a limit. Pre-decided the limit together. He was in charge of bidding, and he bid over $100,000 over our limit. And I'm just like looking at him. He says it was because he knew the other person was going to buy it, and he was pushing up the price, so she'd pay more. But actually, I am not 100% certain that that was correct. And it is, but we both loved it. But when we didn't get it, and we were devastated we didn't get it, when we took our eyes off it and actually stepped back, we were like, my gosh, we were completely in love with this property. And we would have paid over its value. And actually, in the end, buying a house is still an economic decision, as well as choosing somewhere that you love and all those sort of things and finding the right place. It still has to be an economics decision because you're paying that debt off for a very long time.
For quite a long time, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that about Rod. The place we live in now at Kokapakapa, it was going up for auction. This was 2011, I think, when we bought it. And there wasn't a lot of activity going on out there. We went and had a look and thought, yeah, this is good. It's right within our budget. Well, it's the kind of money we'd like to pay. And anyway, I said to the agent, hey, look, yeah, I'd like to put an offer in on this. And he said, look, you know, what would you like to offer? And I said, oh, 380. And he said, oh, mate, it's got to start with a 4. So I said, okay, 400. He said, all right, we'll write that up. And he went away and talked to the vendor about it, et cetera, et cetera. Then he came around to our house, you know, that evening, almost the middle of the night sort of thing, and he had the offer.
Oh, they do, the back and forth.
Yeah, oh, good on him too, you know, full noise to him, you know. But he came in and he said, oh, look, they want 410 minimum. And Kirsty goes, yeah, I'd pay 410. And I looked at her and I said, did you just cost me 10 grand? I said, mate, there is no more. Give me that bit of paper. Signed it. You know, it's a bit like Rod bidding $100,000 over.
Well, $100,000 is a bit more than 10.
I know, but I give a stick about it even now. Jeez, you're lucky this house has gone up in value.
Well, yeah, because you think about that, 10 grand over 30 years is a lot of money.
It's just 10 grand. Like, oh.
So, Campbell, if people want to find you to talk to you about getting a mortgage, especially for a first home, where do they find you?
Online is the place to find us. Yeah. Just Google Go To Guys, and the two is the numeral two, right?
Go
To
Guys. So it's Go With The Two, guys.co.nz.
.co.nz.
And you've got a cool little calculator on your website, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, give it a try. Give it
what
a try.
What does it do?
Well, this will tell you if you qualify for X amount of mortgage. So you plug your details in, so name, phone number, etc. But also your income, whether you've got any debt, children, how many adults
children
in the household.
Debt. Yeah. Children yeah. debt, yeah. Well,
from an expense perspective,
yeah,
they're the same.
Pets.
Yeah. No. So you plug that data in, and this is actually a version of one of the calculators that the bank,
of
the banks give me to use. So it's real. It's not like one of the funny ones you might see on the actual bank websites.
Yeah,
this is the real thing. Yeah, and that will tell you if you qualify or not for that amount of money. Yeah.
Awesome. That will be really helpful. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today.
You're welcome.
And feeling all inspired. I feel like I want to go shopping for a house now. I think that's probably a bad idea. But anyway.
Don't take Rod with you. He'll make you bid too much.
No, he'll make me spend too much money. It'll be terrible. Thank you so much. It's been great. Email, 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 email. Email, sending it off in a flutter. Packed full of your own words, everything you want them to know, 'cause you gotta get the message out. And you're looking how many's opened and how many have unsubscribed, hoping someone's gonna press that button, make the call to buy, buy, buy. It's not going well 'cause you're shouting out. You could use some help. Simplify your conversation. Stop that selling now while you figure out what they want to hear, or you'll become invisible people. No one will read your mail. Find out when you're on sale. Wait for your regale. Straight to the inbox, invisible people. You don't want to be that guy. everyone unsubscribes. It's just a nasty vibe. Dims your successful vibes. Not who you are. You're not invisible. Email marketing is such an important part of most businesses' strategies, but where people go wrong is they try and blast as much information as possible into an email without thinking about the reader. It's really important that you think about what they need to hear instead of what you want to tell them, and to segment and keep your emails short and sweet instead of making them a 12-page elongated conversation about all the amazing things you're doing. Keep it short, sweet, simple, and you won't ever feel invisible.
This has been It's Time to Identify, a podcast from Rachel Klaver from rachelklaver.com. Don't forget to hit subscribe to get the next episode.